Well, let's go ahead and get back into God's Word where we broke off last time. We were talking about how David goes to the priest Ahimelech and gets Goliath's sword and some of the holy bread. And then he goes to Gath and acts like a crazy person in order to keep the king of Gath from arresting him. And there are two psalms that deal with those events. And I told you that as we come to the psalms that have these chronological headings to them, that I was going to bring them into the story. We didn't get around to them yesterday, so I want to do that today. Let's go to Psalm 34 first. Psalm 34. Remember that these headings may not be part of the original inspired text, but they are old enough that there is good reason to believe that they are accurate in associating the psalm with the event that is mentioned. So Psalm 34 has this heading, of David, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech. Now, I think that's a spelling problem in the copying over the years and years and years. Instead of Abimelech, it should say Ahimelech. So one letter is misspelled when they copied. So that he drove him out and he went away. So basically that Abimelech sent him on his way with bread and with the sword of Goliath. Psalm 34. I will bless he who is at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in he who is. Let the humble hear and be glad. O magnify he who is with me, and let us exalt his name together. So there's emotion involved in this where he just wants to praise God. Verse 4, I sought he who is, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears. Now what's he afraid of right now? Saul is trying to kill him. And how has God delivered him? Well, God has delivered him by Samuel being over him and God causing Saul even to lay down on the ground without his royal robes on, prophesying. So that delivered him. And then Jonathan stood up for him and almost got speared. And that is a way that David has been sent on his way. His wife, Michal, helped him out as well. And now the high priest, Ahimelech, has helped him out. Verse 4. Again, I sought he who is, he answered me, delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. And that's a generic, I think, reference to everybody that would trust in the Lord. This poor man cried, and he who has heard him and saved him out of his troubles. The angel of he who is encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. So he has great confidence as he's writing this psalm. O taste and see that he who is good. Now I find that interesting because bread is one of the things that is tied in with the story of Ahimelech. And so David got something that no other non-priest has been able to have, as far as we know up to this point. He got to eat of the bread of the presence of God. So taste and see that he who is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. O fear he who is, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek he who is lack no good thing. Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of he who is. Now, this gets into the idea that when David writes these psalms, not only is he showing his own emotion, but he's also wanting people to learn from this. And in this case, apparently younger people. "Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of he who is. What man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it." Now, what's his complaint about what's been going on lately? People are speaking against him. People are lying about him. People are being deceitful about him and to him. And they are pursuing evil intentions against him. And so he is wanting people to do the right thing. Verse 15, "The eyes of he who is are toward the righteous, and his ears toward their cry. The face of he who is against all those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. For the righteous cry for help, and he who is hears, and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord, or he who is near the brokenhearted, and saves the crushed in spirit." So he just keeps on praising the Lord in the midst of all this. "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but he who is delivers him out of them all. He keeps his bones. Not one of them is broken." Now, isn't that interesting? This is another place that could be the source of the comment in John chapter 19, verse 36, about how Jesus was not done the same way the two thugs were done on the cross, where they had their legs broken, their shin bones were shattered, so that they couldn't push up on the nails anymore and get any more breaths, so that their crucifixion finished up before the Sabbath began. But Jesus was already dead, so they didn't break his bones. Commonly, when we're looking at John 19:36, we make reference back to the Passover lamb, that the lamb's bones were not broken, as was usual at a dinner, because they'd suck the marrow out of the bones. But at the Passover meal, it was supposed to be eaten quickly, and that meant you did not break any of the bones of the lamb. But here we have the exact same phrase in reference to the righteous one that is being afflicted by the evil people and how the Lord delivers him from it. Verse 21, "Affliction will slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned." So ultimate judgment comes from God against the unrighteous, which no doubt David is praying for, against the troublemakers. "He who is redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned." So David closes the psalm by reminding himself and those listening to this song that God eventually will redeem and avenge and justify those that stick with God, those that are righteous. Chapter 56 of the book of Psalms, Psalm 56, has a heading which says, "To the choir master," or "to the overseer," to the perfection, "according to the dove on far-off terebinths." So that is either the name of a tune, or it is the name of an instrument that David designed. And I don't think we can be certain which. But it's to help whoever it is that performs this later to do it in a way that David had in mind when he composed it. A miktam of David, which again speaks to the style of music, I think. But the heading that I want you to pay attention to comes at the very end, when the Philistines seized him in Gath. So we just talked about that last session. So this is a song that he wrote very shortly after that event. "Be gracious to me, O God, for man tramples on me. all day long. An attacker oppresses me. My enemies trample on me all day long, for many attack me proudly. And that's been happening to him for probably a week or more by the time that he gets to Gath. He's had all these hassles going on. When I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God, whose word I praise. In God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? And the answer to that question is nothing, not unless God permits it. Because God does not allow anything to happen to us more than what we can handle. 1 Corinthians 10:13 promises that. So David acknowledges that reality. Whatever happens to him, it is by God's will, and God will bring him through it to accomplish other things. Because David is not yet the full-blown king of Israel, and he knows that he will be. So all of these events, while it feels sometimes like it's going to result in his death, can't be that, because God has made a promise. Verse 5, all day long they injure my cause. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They stir up strife. They lurk. They watch my steps as they've waited for my life. For their crime, will they escape? In wrath, cast down the peoples, O God. And you remember that there were some guys apparently keeping surveillance on David's house, even before they were going to arrest him and kill him. So David may still be thinking about them. Although we can add into that the fact that Achish's spies in the city of Gath, they were keeping a close eye on David as well. Verse 8, you have kept count of my tossings. Put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? The tossings here probably has the idea of being bounced around all over the place. So he's everywhere. And he really was, wasn't he? We started at Gibeah, where Saul tried to kill him. Then he went up to Ramah to be with Saul. Saul tries to get him up there as well. He goes back down to Gibeah, meets with Jonathan. Jonathan barely escapes from Saul's murderous wrath as well. So David moves on up to Gibeon, where the tabernacle's at. That's where he meets with the high priest. He wants to go south from there to meet with his men, but that doesn't seem to work well for him. So he has to detour out through Philistine territory, out through the city of Gath, and that's where he gets picked up by the Gath authorities and brought to the king. And he has to pretend like he's absolutely crazy in order to get out of that situation. So then he finally comes to the cave of Adullam. And I think that's likely where he's writing this psalm. So he's been all over the place, and it's all because of this messed up situation that Saul wants to kill him. And so he's been crying about that. And he says, God, keep my tears on your account and do something about it. Verse 9, then my enemies will turn back in the day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. Do you think maybe Paul was familiar with this passage when he wrote in the book of Romans that if God is for us, who can be against us? Because if God is for us, there is no one that can be against us. Verse 10, in God whose word I praise, in he who is whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? And that's not just a slogan that you can put on your coins or your money, in God we trust. It has to mean something. It has to be real. If we trust God, then we should not fear anything that wicked people might do to us. Because even if they kill us, they can't do away with our relationship with God that supersedes death. Because to be killed in this life is to just be sent to eternal life faster. Verse 12, I must perform my vows to you, O God. I will render thanks offering to you. I think by that line that David may have made promises to God that if you will just get me through this, if you will let all of this get past where I'm not being pursued by Saul and his henchmen, I want to bring thank offerings to you at the tabernacle. Verse 13, for you have delivered my soul from death, yes, my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of life. So a very good psalm of David's trust in God, the King of Israel, the true King of Israel, even when David is being pursued by Saul, the tyrant king of Israel. All right, let's go back to First Samuel chapter 22 and pick up the narrative of David's escape from King Saul in this 18th year of King Saul's kingdom, which I believe is 1020 BC. David is about 28 years of age, and he's got a little less than 2 years before he becomes the king of Israel upon Saul's death. 1 Samuel 22. David departed from there, meaning from Gath, where he faked insanity in order to get away from the authorities. And he escaped to the cave of Adullam, or the stronghold of Adullam. Adullam is less than a day's journey southwest of Jerusalem, and therefore southwest of Gibeah. It's off the beaten path. It's down in the Valley of Elah, or next to the Valley of Elah. So it's right in the border region with the Philistine territories. It's a good place to hide out. And it's about a dozen or so miles from his hometown of Bethlehem. And that brings up who comes and joins him at this point. It says, when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. So they are likely to be on the hit list of Saul as well. Because when you've got vying families for a position of authority in the ancient world, in the ancient Middle East, the goal often of one family was to wipe out the other one. That way they can't be against you anymore, can't cause trouble anymore. So the moment David becomes the public threat to Saul, and Saul wants him dead, it is likely that Saul wanted all of David's brothers and all of David's sisters and their husbands and their kids and his mom and dad, all of them dead. He would have wanted them annihilated. So they escape and they go to Adullam and hang out with him. Verse 2, everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. King Saul has been a rotten leader. Remember that this all started back when the people of Israel decided they wanted a king just like everybody else around them. God told Samuel, you warn them what they're asking for. You tell them what the type of king they want is going to be like. He's going to take their stuff. He's going to impress their people into his armies, into his industrial complexes, into his palace, and he'll take their a big tithe as a tax. He's going to hand off to his people that support him the possessions of other people that don't support him. He's going to be a tyrant. And God said through Samuel, and when all that happens and he makes you his slaves, don't come crying to me. Well, we've now arrived at that. Saul is a tyrant. taxing and drafting the people in such a way that many of them, the moment that they hear that David has gone away from Saul and hidden away in a stronghold down in Judea, they go down and join him. They make all the secret arrangements. Understand that not everybody knows where he's at. They're going to have to figure that out. And there's probably all sorts of passwords and means of getting here. But anyone that is messed up by King Saul's tyranny now wants to come and join David in a sort of shadow government, just waiting for Saul to be taken off the scene. And so he became captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. So that's 400 military adult men, and probably family members, wives and children. So we've probably got a few thousand people that are camped out in and around this cave, this fortress at, or this fortification, this stronghold near the city of Adullam. Now, verse 3, David does something here to keep his parents safe, and maybe even some other members of his family. It says, David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. Now, Moab is on the east side of the Dead Sea, or what was called the Salt Sea back at this time. David wants his parents to go and live with probably some relatives of his. Remember, his great-grandma, Ruth, came from Moab. And so he's still got relatives there. So he has mom and dad go to Moab, and he even reaches out to the king of Moab that perhaps he's had some sort of interaction with. After all, Moab is a near neighbor of the kingdom of Israel, and so David might have had some interaction with them in his military exploits. So he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." Now, he already knows that eventually he will be king, but he just says to the king of Moab, "I want my mom and dad to be safe here, out of the line of fire, until everything gets sorted out on the west side of the Salt Sea in the kingdom of Israel." So he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Now that's a reference to Adullam. Verse 5. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Now that's not a long ways away, probably. If you travel to Israel, which I have done, Ed, there are not heavily forested places in Judea just yet again. They are trying to replant forests, and they're doing a good job of it. But at this time in Israeli history, there were many places, particularly in Judea that we're talking about, that had long-standing ancient forests that were deep shade, high canopy. And you could get lost in there if you didn't know the proper paths and things like that. So the prophet Gad, who's traveling with David, says, "You need to leave Adullam right now because it's dangerous here, and go deeper into the woods." So they do. And this is the reason why he was told to go. Verse 6, "Now Saul heard that David was discovered and the men who were with him." So the reason they had to move is because somebody ratted David out. Somebody let Saul know that David is down in Judean territory. And this makes Saul angry. And this is where we will take up the story as we begin next week's study, right here in 1 Samuel chapter 22, verse number 6. Have a great weekend.